President Joe Biden has officially announced a series of executive actions aimed at addressing gun violence in the United States. Measures include restrictions on who can buy certain guns and tightened regulations on stabilizing braces for pistols. Biden ran for president on a gun control platform that activists praised as the strongest in history, but reforms won't come without a fight in an evenly divided Senate, and the National Rifle Association has said it's ready to fight any new federal gun control measures. People are divided on how they feel about guns. A Gallup poll in February showed that 56% of Americans are dissatisfied with current gun laws in the U.S. 42% are very or somewhat satisfied with current laws. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234, not just about what you think about laws, but how you came to feel that way, your experiences with guns over your lifetime that led to your thoughts now. What experiences or beliefs shape the way you feel about guns and who has the right to buy and own them? Did you grow up in a gun-owning family? Were you a victim of gun violence? When did you start feeling strongly about guns, for or against? Or do you have mixed feelings? What do you argue with yourself about? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Robert Spitzer is a Distinguished Service Professor of Political Science at State University of New York at Cortland. He's the author of 5 books on gun policy, including the new 8th edition of The Politics of Gun Control. Bob, welcome back to Central Time.
It's good to be with you.
Well, in this new suite of executive actions from the president, some are aimed at violence prevention. Some are technical things related to guns. Let's start with that second part first. What kind of control measures do you see coming from the White House here?
Well, they're trying to do what they can by executive orders. And let me just say, it's important to point out that executive orders are legally binding, but they only apply to the executive branch and the behavior of executive branch agencies. So generally speaking, they don't necessarily have the reach of regular legislation passed by Congress, whereas, as you pointed out in your setup, President Biden is going to face a pretty tough time dealing with the evenly divided U.S. Senate. But in terms of the executive orders he's formulating, I would say that the one about ghost guns is really extremely important. In 2019, 10,000 ghost guns were recovered at crime scenes or in the hands of criminals. And as many of your listeners know, ghost guns refers to guns generally that are bought in parts and assembled by the person who buys them, but they have no identifying serial numbers on them. And that's the critical thing about them. They're not traceable for that reason. And it raises the question, of course, of namely why any honest person would want to have a gun with no serial numbers on it. And the only reason that one could think of is because they want to do something bad with the gun. And law enforcement all around the country has reported a dramatic increase in these weapons appearing at crime scenes. And since 2019, I've no doubt that, in this year we'll see far more than 10,000 ghost guns recovered at crime scenes. So this would be the point to try and stop the flow of those before they become a ever more massive problem. So that, I think, is a very important step that he wants to take. He's also proposed a couple of things that have received less attention. One is that they want to replicate a study that was last done 20 years ago on gun trafficking, because even now, the information that the government and researchers have about gun trafficking patterns is fairly incomplete. And it's extremely useful to know how guns are trafficked from the point of leaving a factory to the point at which something bad happens with them or to them or using them. And so purely as a matter of getting a better handle on gun trafficking patterns, that could be very important, as is this proposal of the Biden administration to establish a legal template for red flag laws. 20 states have adopted these so-called red flag laws, and these are laws that say if a person who owns guns exhibits immediate and dire behavior such that they may be suicidal or homicidal, a relative or the police can file a motion, have the guns temporarily removed. A judge examines the case to decide whether the person should get the guns back or not. And there have already been several studies of these laws in other states, because they've been around for a while, that showed that they've been pretty effective, especially in stemming suicides. So those are, all fairly important steps, I would say.
Then other executive actions aim to direct money to local violence prevention programs. Where do you see an effort like that as far as what we need to prevent gun violence?
Well, this is something that you would think absolutely everybody would be in favor of, and indeed it may well have bipartisan support, because this is an intervention kind of program. First, we've seen these programs in localities around the country, and they've been carried out unevenly. Some of them are well-funded, some of them not. Some localities have gone aggressively in this direction and others not. But they seem to be pretty effective in staving off violence to begin with, and especially gun violence. And so, you know, preventing a violent encounter, especially if guns are involved, would be a really, you know, tremendously useful strategy, and one based on these kinds of programs in the past that has the potential of being very promising and effective, and they're putting a fair amount of money behind it. So that, I think, would be also a really significant step.
Talking to Robert Spitzer from the State University of New York at Cortland. He's the author of many books related to gun policy, including the new 8th edition of The Politics of Gun Control, looking at new executive actions from the Biden administration. Interested in hearing from you if you want to share your story of your relationship with firearms through your life and how you think that's affected your political views on them, whether they're on one side or another or mixed. You can join in at 800-642-1234. And Bob, I want to get into some of that, the public opinion side of things and how we try to measure what leads people to think about guns in the way that they do. And that's a big part of the politics of gun control. What do we know about why we think what we do about guns and gun control?
Well, like many issues, it has a lot to do with your personal experiences and your personal background. And people who own guns and for whom gun ownership is meaningful, it's not just a rifle propped in a closet somewhere that never gets pulled out, but for people who care about the shooting sports, about gun ownership and use, they have that personal experience. And unfortunately, gun owners have been bombarded with a lot of negative messaging over the years about the prospect or the consequences of various gun regulations. People who hold those opinions most strongly also will act very much based on, and by any mean in a political way, will act based on their beliefs on the gun issue. And that's what has made the kind of the gun rights movement a very powerful and influential movement in kind of the American interest group system. And most people do support stronger gun laws. And in fact, most gun measures find support among gun owners as well. But among those who don't own guns, they don't have that kind of personal experience. And while some Americans do have direct experience with, violence in their lives, family members, things like that, we have to remember that despite the alarming news about mass shootings and other things, crime rates are low. Crime rates, including violent crimes, have been dropping in America for nearly 30 years. We have seen an uptick in the murder rate in the last couple of years, and that's obviously not a good thing. But America is really a pretty safe place, and that includes violent crimes, too, despite the headline-grabbing shootings and violent crimes that do occur. And in that context, the majority of Americans don't have the kind of deep personal connection to the gun issue, and so most Americans support stronger gun laws, but it's not something that the typical American has a real strong feeling about. And it's only when something terrible happens, like a mass shooting, for example, that people become indignant and really focus on the attention. But what happens is that as time goes by, attention tends to turn back to other issues that people are more likely to be thinking about. So you have a small but highly motivated minority that's kind of the gun rights community that's active on the issue and expresses themselves politically, which, of course, is, part of the political process, versus the large but less motivated majority on this particular issue.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Stephen is with us in Waterford. Stephen, hi.
How are you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Stephen?
Well, I just want to let you know that I'm a 73-year-old male that served 8 years in the Marine Corps during the Vietnam era. And I have had weapons or guns in my possession up until now, and I feel that they're necessary for me to continue, you know, protecting society if I need to. And I do have a concealed carry permit, which I think is valid. And I also think that there should be controls on who gets weapons or guns. But it's very difficult to determine and protect or prejudge who's going to maybe change their attitude towards society at any given moment. It's a hard one to do. I mean, gun control is hard to do because you don't see those individuals as being a threat to society until it's over with.
Stephen, thanks a lot for you for your call and for sharing your thoughts. And Bob, I think for a lot of people, we hear most likely from people on the opposite ends of the debate, and I suspect, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of people are going to have somewhere in the middle type views. Stephen has guns, believes people should be allowed to have guns, wants to see gun control in some ways, recognizes it's tough to do.
Well, I think Stephen makes two really good points, to be honest. The first is he says that it's a hard issue, and that's absolutely right. I mean, that's why somebody like me can write a lot about this subject, because it's politically complicated, and that's absolutely true, especially these days, you know, in such a hyper-partisan atmosphere generally. And the other thing is that, and Stephen reflects kind of what I've found, because I talk to gun owners. I have a concealed carry permit myself here in New York State. And when you talk to gun owners, very typically what you hear is you introduce the term gun control and people kind of recoil from that. But then when you ask them, well, if you were in charge, you know, what laws would you like to see on the books? And what you often find is that gun owners realize that people who abuse guns hurt everybody who owns a gun. And that there are ways and there are policies to get at, you know, to sort of improve the situation. You're not going to eliminate violence or eliminate guns, obviously, but there are steps that can be taken. There are things that can be done. And gun owners often have some of the best ideas about what those steps should be.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Robert Spitzer, Distinguished Service Professor of Political Science at State University of New York at Cortland. As he just mentioned, he's written a lot about guns and politics, 5 books on gun policy, including the new 8th edition of The Politics of Gun Control. He's talking to us some about President Joe Biden's recent moves aimed at addressing gun violence via executive action. Also, we want to hear from you about what formed your opinions about guns in your life and guns and the law. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you grow up with firearms in your house, or are they kind of an alien substance in your life? Do you live in a community where guns are common and commonly carried for hunting or other purposes, or far from such a place? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about President Joe Biden, executive actions related to gun violence, and what leads people to think about guns and the law the way they do. Robert Spitzer is with us, Distinguished Service Professor of Political Science at the State University of New York at Cortland. He's written many books on gun policy. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on gun-related issues and how you got there. Tony is with us next in Milwaukee. Tony, hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for this conversation. Before my question, I could share a little bit about where I'm coming from. That
sure.
I am not pro gun. I'm for gun control. But I'm trying to, you know, expand my viewpoints on kind of where people are coming from. I've noticed too, within my family, and, you know, some friend groups that it's like, that people that they get kind of like more recently been really like driven to this gun, culture. So that was a concern for me. But to my question, you mentioned that there's, that the America is a safe place. I think he said that, and that gun crime or crimes are going down. But what's that relative to? What is, you know, how can you put some context into that? If you look at us in a bubble, maybe the rates are going down. I don't have them in front of me, but how does that compare to all the other countries in the world? And like, is that like, I think that needs to be put into context because
I got you, Tony. I want to bring our guest in and get some more calls too. But I thanks for sharing your story and your question. His question first, Bob: how do we stack up the United States violence-wise, gun violence-wise in particular, with the rest of the world?
Well, with respect to crime and violent crime, the rates in other nations like European nations similar to us are quite similar. Overall crime rates fairly similar. Crime rates in European nations and Western democratic nations have been declining like they have been in the U.S. The one anomaly, the one difference is our murder rate is far, far higher than those nations. And that's because murder overwhelmingly involves firearms. No implement or weapon is more effective at hurting or killing a person than a gun. And that effect shows up in our statistics and why the American murder rate is so much higher per capita than in other nations, whereas our crime rates are really very comparable otherwise.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Eli now in La Crosse. Eli, hello. Hello. Excuse me. Hi, Eli.
Hi. I'm very pro-gun. I grew up around guns, always been interested in them, and I'm a young guy. I'm like 21, and as I've been growing older, I've consistently seen these harder and harder pushes to try to ban guns outright or ban certain types of guns, and it pushes a lot of us who would be okay with some of the things that gun control activists want to push back to not allow any to pass. But like everything that Biden said in his executive orders, well, not everything, but a majority of it was not fact-based. There's a quote going around. He said, not all amendments are absolute. And if not all amendments are absolute, then our government stands on nothing. And just a lot of, I would say a lot of the minority of gun control activists, the very vocal minority, are pushing for policies that a lot of gun owners in America cannot agree with. And then even all the first-time gun owners in America, because gun ownership has gone up an insane amount over the last 18 months.
Eli, thanks a lot for the call. Lot to work with there, Bob. First of all, I'm interested in Eli's perspective that when one side hears the other side, in his case as a gun owner hearing gun control measures be raised, hardening the lines, pushing people apart. What do you make of what he had to say there?
Well, it does. Partly people are hearing responding to messaging over years and years and years that any new gun regulation or gun law is the first step to, you know, confiscation. But it's important to remember we have roughly 300 million guns in America, so they're not going away. Even a proposal like restricting assault weapons pretty much nibbles at the edge of that. I mean, there might be 10 million, 12 million assault weapons in America, and even if every one of them disappeared, and nobody's saying that, that would still leave nearly 300 million guns anyway. So they're not going anywhere. And his point about constitutional amendments, despite the point he was making, every constitutional amendment has limits. There is no such thing as an absolute constitutional amendment. Even something like free speech or free press, people understand that there are limitations on free speech. Pornography, libel, slander, national security, commercial restrictions, any right you care to name has limitations. I think most people understand that that's the case. And as the Supreme Court made clear, it is possible to balance an individual right to have guns with existing gun laws. And the Supreme Court said as much back in 2008.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Eli. I appreciate it. I want to share an email from Bill. Bill says he believes in gun owning rights, but not unfettered rights. And I'm going to quote from Bill's email. In my early 20s, there was a period when I was despondent and suicidal. I hatched a plan to travel west to take my own life, hoping the distance would somewhat reduce the trauma to my family here in Wisconsin. I got off a bus, Bill writes, in Colorado, went to a pawn shop and tried to buy a pistol. They couldn't sell me one because I wasn't a resident and would first have to establish that. Bill says that legal pause probably saved my life, and here I am writing to you 40 years later. Bill, thank you for sharing your story. I don't know, it's Bill's happy that law was there. I'm happy Bill's still here. Can we find places where people can agree on some measures, Bob, that are going to maybe save some lives?
Sure we can. And two key points there. One is that there are twice as many gun suicides every year as gun homicides. And that fact still isn't out there to the degree it should. That's why these red flag laws can be really important. And the other thing is that no implement is more effective at completing the suicide act than a gun. And there's all sorts of studies on that. And if you can intercede, if you can get a gun away from a person who might be suicidal, if a gun has a lock on it in a home, which it should, especially if you got a despondent teenager or, you know, somebody who's suicidal, those kinds of things can make a huge difference, and they're not that complicated.
Should throw out the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number. It's 800-273-8255. And Bob, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us again today.
Good to be with you.
Robert Spitzer is Distinguished Service Professor and Chair of the Political Science Department at the State University of New York at Cortland. He's the author of 5 books on gun policy, including the new 8th edition of The Politics of Gun Control. He joined us for a look at new executive actions from the Biden administration related to gun violence. And we heard from you about how you developed some of your feelings related to guns and the law.